You are listening to Let's Talk Tribe, the official Let's Go Tribe podcast.
Swung and lined to deep left field. It is gone! Hit well. Deep right. Batista's going to wave goodbye. Start the fireworks show.
This is Let's Talk Tribe, the official Let's Go Tribe podcast, episode 147. I'm your host, Matt Lyons, and in this week's episode, for our first, well, our first meatballs of the season, we'll discuss the great starting pitchers the Indians have seen so far. We'll talk about some extra inning shenanigans, Cesar Hernandez's theory of getting on base twice, Francisco Lindor's general lack of clutchiness through the first few games, and of course, we'll take your questions. Joining me for all that and more is another Mr. Merritt Rolfing. Merritt, how you doing?
I'm fantastic, Matthew. Thanks for asking. I appreciate it. I have a bit of a stomach ache from eating too much pizza yesterday, but that's beyond the scope of this podcast. You can't heal me.
And normally I would say there's no such thing as too much pizza, but considering I know what you ordered, it might have been too much pizza.
Those who follow me on Twitter know that I've been fascinated by the shakaroni pizza for going on a week now.
Is it not just a large pizza? That's the thing I don't get about it.
It's an extra large pizza made with a large pizza's crust. Now what this means is it's extra thin. It also has double pepperoni, and I think it's supposed to have double cheese or something, but it didn't, so I don't care. Anyway, it was fine.
That's just a large pizza then with thin crust.
No, it's stretched out more. It's the size of an extra large, but with the dough amount of a large. I don't know why.
So then it's just an extra large pizza.
Yeah, basically with thin crust.
Yeah, that's good. I like thin crust.
And double pepperoni and Shaquille O'Neal on the box. So, I mean, who's the winner here? Me. Let's be really. Anyway, it was, my wife heated a slice up after it had gotten cold. It got so greasy. She said, none of this for me at all. And she gave me the rest. I probably threw like a third of it out. I'm not going to sit here and say it was good pizza. So that was my weekend. Not much else happened.
Yeah, not a whole lot of, the whole baseball thing that started or anything. It was,
You
had to watch a couple games, yeah. Yeah, it was Friday, obviously started the season. Really good game there. Saturday, less good. Sunday, also pretty good. We got our first series of games to watch. A lot more coming up this week to play the White Sox. But first, Merritt, of course, we've had games. So the first thing we have to do.
Meatball.
These are meatballs. For anybody.
Why do we call it meatballs? I forgot what the entire.
Because these are interesting tidbits that we're serving up over the plate, Merritt, and they're meatballs. This was
right, okay.
This was run through a boardroom of considerations and several revisions, and we landed on meatballs. But yeah, the meatballs, the section itself, for anybody who listens or doesn't listen for a while, is we just find little tidbits just as a way to sort of talk about the games the past week. Find one thing to zero in on and get really specific about it and share it. Mine this week was, of course, James Karinchak, who pitched two innings in the loss on Saturday. He is an absolute maniac on the mound, even more in a regular game, it seems. We saw a little bit of in the preseason. I mean, he was yelling at himself. He bit his glove, which has now been a GIF, and that's great. He's just so angry, and he had a really good game, too. It wasn't like he was mad about anything, but he had two innings, no hits, two strikeouts, a walk, and he lost. Welcome to extra innings baseball in 2020. As far as I could tell, as long as I use the play index right, it's the first time anybody has not given up a hit and still got a loss for the game, let alone pitch two innings and not gave up a hit and still got the loss.
That seems almost impossible that it's never happened, though.
I might be messing something up, but I tried to mess around with it, but it seems like...
I'll be honest with you, Matt. I'm going to assume you are, so...
Well, there you go. I would, too. But either way, it's rare and it's stupid because it's the way that extra innings work now, because the way it works is they started with their runner on second, which they worked very hard to get, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
Then they just bunted over. That's not a hit when you bunt them over. There was a sac fly. That's not a hit. And then the inning was over pretty quickly. So I think we're going to see, we'll talk about more about extra innings in a little bit, but we'll see a lot more quick relievers because, I mean, you get the two outs and you get the third out real quick. So I guess if their goal is to speed up the game, it works. But as for James Karinchak and I'm sure a lot of other relievers, it's going to be pretty bad. And there's going to be a lot of glove biting and... For James, it was fun to actually watch him. Another thing about James Karinchak is, I don't know if it's just me, but watching like his curveball and the way he throws it is so weird. Like the amount of effort and trajectory does not match the way the ball looks for some reason. It's just the weird angle that he does it.
I don't know
if that's part of what makes it so good, but it just doesn't look like it should go where it does when he throws it.
No, he has that weird, like way over the shoulder, almost like throwing it over his head kind of delivery.
Yeah.
It's just such a very like max effort. But it looks like it just, I don't know.
But it just bloops right in there.
It just zwomp. Like, it just, I don't know. Yeah. Well, we can give it different names and sounds and whatnot, but it basically just...
I prefer Zorp. That's a good one.
Yeah. Kind of just collapses into the strike zone. And the way you could... I thought it was funny, too, because Rick Manning was like, and you know what? If he could start throwing it for strikes, you know what? He could have a pretty good role. And then he just immediately throws three straight strikes. And I'm like, oh, damn. Well, I guess what, Rick? Maybe the guy who throws 91 miles an hour with a slider isn't the closer anymore pretty soon.
That was opposed to when Brad Hand was in and they said he could live with a low velocity as long as he has good control and then immediately hit a batter. So
yeah, exactly.
It's kind of the opposite of what happened there.
This is why we love Rick Manning and missed him so much. It was because he's prescient in a way.
So yeah, that's my only meatball. I just wanted to have one quick one. So what's yours, Merritt?
Well, we were going to talk about the pitchers anyway, so I figured I'd just kind of swoop those in. It was just kind of a funny thing that happened in the game on Saturday with Mike Clevinger pitching. He threw 11 changeups in that game. Interesting. He had a very kind of just general breakdown of pitches. I don't think he threw 50%. He threw a ton of slider. He was almost like 50-50 on slider versus fastball, like in terms of just those two pitches. And I thought that was pretty interesting because he's still got that good velocity, but like just not using it, instead using what has become a very, very good slider. 38 fastballs and 33 sliders. Anyway, I want to talk about his changeup, and he threw 11 of them. But up until the, what was it? Yes, the fourth inning, he'd thown one. Prior to that, he had made, this is all going to be about Alex Gordon too, because he's fun to talk about. He's everyone's favorite. He had popped out to third baseman Jose Ramirez in the first inning after a couple home runs. So this is the fourth inning. And again, he turned one changeup. So everything he'd been throwing so far was sliders, 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 fastballs, fastballs, fastballs. In fact, open that inning, he had thrown three straight sliders to Salvador Perez. So then he commenced to go to Alex Gordon, changeup, curveball, 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 fastball, changeup, changeup. And I just, Alex Gordon looked so goddamn confused in the box. Like, he's like, what the hell? Like that called strike that just kind of just shot back over the, he kind of just, it used to be a front door. He kind of front doored him with the run on the changeup and just struck him right out there. And I thought that was just amazing. And he just totally got in Alex Gordon's head and it was fantastic. I thought that was my favorite probably sequence of that game. And then just kind of staying in that vein on Friday night. Let me see if I can find the exact right at bat. I think it was like a fourth inning at bat, maybe the sixth inning. I don't know, whatever. It was an at bat against Alberto Mondesi, but you probably remember this one too, Matt, but it was just, he got him like 0-2, and he just started throwing, Bieber just started throwing curveballs, and he just kept on throwing curveballs, and he just took and took and took, so it was 3-2, and he's like, let's throw fucking another one. And he just threw another one, and he struck him out. I don't know. Yeah, I always love that, because it's like, this is a guy in Bieber who lives in the zone, and outside of two pitches, that entire at-bat was out of the zone, to the point where he had four separate strikeouts alone, where in the game day it said, swinging strike in the parentheses, blocked. He had more swing strikes like that also that weren't strikeouts, but I don't know. I just enjoyed his use of not the strike zone at all, and then his Clevinger totally breaking Alex Gordon's brain temporarily there in the second game. They were fantastic, though, and it was a lot of fun to watch.
I was trying to look while you were talking about it, because didn't they have a new advanced scout for pitching or some kind of it wasn't their pitching coach, because still Carl Willis, but somebody who was new to the pitching staff.
I don't remember, to be honest with you.
Oh man. But I was gonna say, like, that all comes down to scouting and the game plan. I would think they're throwing that many curveballs, especially the fact that Bieber and Clevinger both did it. I think that's cool. That, I mean, it's clear whoever that, I can't remember who it was. There was somebody they promoted or something, but I'm sure whoever it is, maybe it's Carl Willis, who knows, but somebody's doing a really good job scouting and knowing just to destroy the Royals with curveballs. And like you said, blow Alex Gordon's head or his mind with all these curveballs. So it's just neat to see it actually in action right there. But and we can use this as a nice little segue in actually talking about the pitcher.
You didn't have to point it out. You didn't have to.
No, I did. We can't be officially out of the meatball section, Merritt. That's it's a hallowed ground. So we have to make sure that we're in there. But yeah,
so that's also that's my kind of meatball and a half. If you imagine like a meatball made of pork, veal, and ground beef. That was what I was bringing with a little meatball and a half there. There you go. I
really it's a large meatball stretched out into an extra large meatball.
It's man. It's an extra expando meat. You might call that some sort of burger almost.
It's a shakaroni meatball.
It's a shakaroni meatball.
So yeah, Bevinger, Bieber, Clevinger, and Carrasco, they combined, the three starters, 19 innings, 12 hits, 4 runs, 30 strikeouts. I think it was like a 1.89 ERA it accounts to. That is an incredible run. Bieber obviously was the brunt of that with 14 strikeouts. He did really good. Clevinger had quite a few himself. It's just, holy cow. I think we talked about before the season that they're going to live and die by how good their top three are, and they so far look really good. Obviously, I think since our last episode, Plesac has been announced as the fifth starter, so that's encouraging. And then, of course, Savali will be starting tomorrow against the White Sox. So excited. Every single day, there's just somebody fun to watch, even all the way down to Plesac. I'm excited to see what he does over a full game. And then Savali, obviously, if he's like a mini Kluber. If it does rely on the pitchers carrying a team, they're in good shape, I would hope, let alone in the playoffs, like getting through a 60-game season while the batters are all ice cold and warming up, and you have these three coming at you every series, at least one of them, I would think.
They were talking about the White Sox series coming up, and it's going to be Savali and Plesac, but then it's Bieber again, right? They are so well positioned to, obviously have an ace level pitcher in every single series at least once, if not twice. A lot of times twice. So their ability to just, and again, we will, the caveat being it's the Royals. I'm not going to sit here and say that I'm staring at the Royals lineup. Whit Merrifield's a very good hitter. Adalberto Montesi is a flawed but talented hitter. Jorge Soler can hit the ball. He did that accidental home run on Saturday was absolutely insane.
Yeah, which, by the way, shouldn't have happened because he clearly swung, and then they said it was a check swing.
Oh, sure.
Just to note, Merritt.
You're right. you are the first person to point this out, man. That's interesting.
The only one, nobody else.
And then Salvador Perez is good. He's not going to ever put up amazing numbers. I've always been, you're right. His numbers last year were bad, Matt. He just seems to kill the Indians is what it is. He's timely.
That's different than being good. There are several not good players that seem to kill the Indians.
That's very fair. I don't know. I think he's pretty good. He's the kind of guy who can run into one by accident a whole ton. He's never going to walk a lot at all. He's just gigantic. But even saying that, Carrasco was absolutely dominant today, and it was the second best pitching performance of the weekend. Shane Bieber was unhittable. He looked a little rocky to open it up, and then after that, it was just over. It was just over with. Like, the game just, you could just kind of feel it slamming shut by the, like, what they scored those two runs, the fourth inning or whatever, and you could just kind of feel it becoming impossible.
Bieber also got some help from a very large strike zone. I think he even said it, or somebody said, like, him or Clevinger mentioned that Bieber was getting some help there, but Carrasco didn't get that, man. He was just dominant,
Strongly in the zone, and that's the thing. I was looking at his pitching lineup too. The pitch he threw more than anything else was his slider, and I think that's what we're going to see a lot of this. And this is something I was thinking about: like, how is this year going to look different? I always remember looking at Corey Kluber the last several years. He changed how he approached hitters throughout the year, and seemed like every time, like once he started folding the slider into a higher degree, it just like his everything just started. ERAs were just started dropping, strikeouts started piling up, and he won another Cy Young like every time he did that. But they're not gonna have the time to build any kind of thing like that to start the season, so they're just gonna have to come out with their best guns blazing all the time. Maybe that's why we're seeing such a heavy mix of breaking balls and sliders, because they're not trying to start 30 games; they only need to start 10 games, 11 games, 12 games, whatever it is. And, the slider is a bit harder on the elbow and harder on the arm. And all those pitches are a bit harder on the arm than just a normal fastball. So maybe we're just going to see that all year. It's just twirling breaking balls. It'll be something to keep an eye on. But I think Bieber probably threw the most fastballs of anyone. But the fact of the matter is he can locate it on an absolute dime. And
oh, yeah, he got 14 called strikes on him. It was ridiculous. I mean, some of those obviously were a gift from the umpire, but some of them were also just Shane Bieber doing what Shane Bieber does.
Oh, a combination of a pitcher like Shane Bieber benefits so much from a catcher like Roberto Perez too, right? Like that was thing, yeah. Because he can pound that corner over and over and over, and like it will become a strike over time. Because I've always wondered if this isn't a thing that umpires kind of get sucked into over the course of a game, where like if you are throwing in a certain spot constantly, like it's almost like your intent compels them to consider it more of a strike, because you're not like missing a spot. You're hitting your spot over and over and over. And so, I guess that is a strike. It's right there on the edge, but we'll allow it. And so throughout the game, the zone would then expand. But yeah, no, it was really an incredible, I won't quite say it for the relief pitchers, but it was an incredible series of events for all of
them. The starting pitchers were incredible and the relievers were there.
I mean, hey, I got to see Nick Wickren twice. I'm a big fan of Nick Wickren, and I think he's going to be good. So,
yeah, I saw people that were upset that Karinchak wasn't used, and then also upset that Wickren was used. Like, I get one, but I don't get the other. Wickren coming in is a good thing. He's a really good reliever.
Yeah,
I think he's a really underrated reliever.
Like, he was one of the best relievers that the Indians had last year. Like, he was.
Oh yeah,
them picking him up really solidified the entire bullpen. Yeah, he doesn't throw 99, but. I think there's something going on. He's easily
the most reliable reliever this year. Yeah. I mean, he doesn't have the highest ceiling like Karinchak, but he's easily the most reliable reliever right now.
Exactly. I mean, and that's the kind of guy who might have a bigger impact over a long season. But at the same time, I think his stuff is better than we think. I wrote about that when I was writing about, I guess when I was writing about Plesac last week, I'd mentioned how like his break, the baseball savant kind of profiles him to his similarity score to be close to that of Justin Verlander. Even though Verlander has a higher spin rate, I wonder if it's a useful spin thing. You know what I mean? Like he gets, you know, whatever RPM, but because he's getting, you know, he's not getting gyroscopic spin, he's getting real spin. Maybe it's harder to hit than we can actually quantify based on raw high spin rate. All those, you know, all those Statcast numbers we look at, they're higher is always better, but you can throw a fucking cement mixer slider up there at 5,000 RPM. It's still going to go 5,000 feet the other direction. So,
right. Yeah. Yeah, so one of the other things that we saw this weekend was, of course, the dawn of the extra inning rule era, hopefully, which is just for this year. But we saw the Royals, which I apparently didn't know the rule well enough. It's the last batter that came up is the runner at second. And that's the way it was. The Royals were up on Saturday with Karinchak on the mound. They bunted him over, hit him with a sac fly. That was it. That was over. It was dumb. I feel like even when it happens for the Indians, I'm going to feel the same way. It just doesn't feel good. I guess it shortened the game. If your goal is to just make the game quicker, why not just put the guy at third and have an out and just shorten it even more?
That's ridiculous, man.
And so is putting a guy on second. They're both stupid. And I think there's also the problem that it benefits the... I feel like it's unfairly weighted towards the away team because they need to get the one run, and then which is basically trivial as long as you can execute very simple things. And then the home team has to do that. Well, I guess, I don't know. I guess it's the same, but it's... It benefits the home. You're basically just giving the away team a run first, which doesn't seem fair that the home team has to respond or they're screwed instead of the away team has to earn it first. And then the home team has a chance. But especially like in the Indians case, they didn't bunt, which I thought was good because you're down by one at that point. You need to score more than one to win. So it doesn't matter just to get the one. But then it's also worth noting they didn't lose the game because of that rule. They lost because Francisco Lindor had a terrible game and him and Jose Ramirez were up in the bottom of the 10th with a chance to win, and they both flubbed it horribly. But, yeah. So what are your thoughts, I guess, outside of the Indians totally butchering it, just a general idea of how the extra innings worked for the first time?
So my first experience with the extra inning rule actually came on Friday night. I was up until 2 a.m. for whatever reason. And I was watching the A's playing the... I don't remember who the other team was. It was 2 a.m. what he won for me. That's right, the Angels. And they won it on a grand slam. And I thought that was pretty cool. So I thought that that was cool, meaning that I was more for it when it started happening to the Indians. And you know what? It did suck a little bit that they lost. But I am still of the opinion that they should just do more wild shit this year. Then they can even, you know, they should start thinking new things up right now and just cramming them into the game. You know,
like just new rules every week. Baseball's completely changed every week. It's a new, it's like seasons. And
no, you just get a wheel with 16 ideas on it and you spin it once a week and the new one's you subtract the old one, you add the new one.
One of them just says fire with no extra explanation. You just got to learn when you get there.
I mean, you know what? There was that article in Baseball Prospectus a while back about what if there was a gigantic hole in the ground behind shortstop? And I thought that was very interesting.
What if there was a giant hole?
Go check out the old Baseball Prospectus article. They really delve into it for like 1,000 words. Spoiler, it causes an impact. So, you know, things like that. I don't know. I don't mind it, to be honest with you. I understand that it's a weird way to quote-unquote speed up the game. But I don't know. Whatever.
I'd be fine if it was just this year, but if they're keeping it past it, it kind of
right, exactly. I mean, if it creeps in next year, I'm going to give it more than just experiencing it two times, one of them totally dope, the other one kind of a bummer.
Was the Grand Slam here made possible because of the rule, or just, I mean, it would have just been a home run, he still would have won, right?
Well, yeah, maybe, but then there's a chance that Matt Olson wouldn't have gotten up, right? Because it by having the guy on second automatically, you're already moving the entire lineup up one, and so they were able to work it out. And maybe you're right. Maybe it would not have worked out, but maybe the pressure of having the guy on second already made the pitcher pitch out of the stretch, and so he walked a guy. I don't remember what else happened in the inning.
Yeah.
I think I was talking about hot dogs or something with my little brother over Zoom. But I ate a lot of hot dogs on Friday night too, so I had kind of hot dog brain. Yeah, so maybe you're right. Maybe it would have just been a two-run home run or whatever instead. But I'll tell you what happened was a grand slam, and those are cool. So I don't know. I mean, lots of ifs and buts here. But obviously having that guy on second, it changes everything for the pitcher, because like I said before, they have to pitch out of the stretch. Now, and a lot of relievers do that anyway, but I mean, that's a lot of pressure on the back of your head. It is hard. I mean, I know Mike Clevenger tweeted out after the game that it was kind of BS because how hard it is to get a guy on second with no outs off what would be probably the stiffest part of your bullpen, right? Like if it hadn't been Karinchak out there, it would have been Hand or whoever, right? Because it's still, I don't know how Tito is pitching.
I think if you get the extra innings, something failed somewhere. Like, yeah, I don't think you put your best guy in.
Right, exactly.
Head, and then I think you put your best guy in on your head, and then if you're in the extras, he probably screwed up, and then somebody else might be in there.
Sure, but if you're going
either way, it's hard. Yeah,
right. I mean, because it was tied at two from like the fourth inning on. No, I don't know. I didn't mind it. It's again, it sucked. It was the worst kind of way for it to all happen because they just small-balled their way to a single run, and the Indians just were so close. Like they had the biggest opportunity possible. And so I don't think that's baseball's fault because they had the chance, and then they just tanked it really bad.
Yeah.
So yeah. I would only say that.
And then also
– because they blew it, I'm less angry about it than maybe you are.
Yeah, the rule was just dumb, but the Indians obviously lost that game themselves. They didn't lose because of the rule. At Richard K. Bach on Twitter, it's one of our questions that I also wanted to – it fits so well in here. Now, he said, when a game is tied in the bottom of an extra inning, will the lead batter be intentionally walked to set up a double play if the leadoff hitter is really weak? I mean, why wouldn't you, I guess? Yeah, right? If the game's tied going into the bottom, you set up the double play, especially if you have, like, somebody's really bad at the plate who hits a lot of ground balls. That's a really good –
exactly what might happen because –
because you only need one run anyway. It doesn't matter. It's just like if it's the bottom of the ninth and the guy gets a double.
Looking at, you know, let's say the Indians lineup from yesterday. I'm just looking at it a minute ago. They lost that one 3-2. Yeah, so like let's say, Carlos Santana starts at second, so Franmil Reyes is up. Do you pitch to Daniel Johnson or do you walk him, right? Or
did walk Daniel Johnson to get to Oscar Mercado at one point, which I thought was kind of a disrespect to Mercado. It worked, of course, but it was like getting the guy in his first career start gets walked to get to you. Poor Mercado. Yeah.
Poor Mercado. I hope he does. I hope he does okay this year. he fell off such a cliff last year, and I'm just worried about it. About that all just being a big fat flash in the pan. But we'll see.
It was fun for a little bit. Yeah.
It was a hoop, a real hoop.
It was. Now, someone who isn't, he's a flash in the pan right now, but I hope he's not forever. Is Cesar Hernandez? The framing for how we were going to talk about him was initially I thought it was a really neat post about. That you wrote on Friday, because on the broadcast, and Rick Manning, in one of his wonderful ways of telling a story, shot off into several different directions. And I think maybe Cesar Hernandez said that if he gets on base twice, the Indians would win. But honestly, I have no idea.
I'm 90% sure I wrote an article about it, so I'm pretty sure. But
even if he didn't, Andre not brought up the idea of making it into a stat just for fun. And then Rick Manning, of course, shot off in another direction from there. But he said if he gets on base twice, the Indians win, which, I mean, it's a good thing, right? If he's a leadoff guy or wherever he hits, if you get a guy that's guaranteed to get on base twice, you'll win quite often. And then, of course, on Saturday, he got on base twice. The Indians promptly lost. So that was right out the window. But you did look into it, and it's pretty much right down the line, right? That, I mean, he helped. It's a little bit of a boost every time he gets on base.
It's
he was also
on the
Phillies
who weren't
good.
Right, exactly. Well, I'm sure
there are other factors, but yeah.
Well, yeah, he was adding, you know, I mean, the year that they had like a 409 win percentage, when he got on base twice, they won like a 572 clip or something like that. So he, I mean, it adds, you know, it adds to it. I in the same post, I mentioned that when Lindor got on base twice last year, the Indians were like, they had like a 7-12 winning percentage. And because he was their leadoff hitter last year. It's good to get your leadoff hitter on base. It's good to get anyone on base, obviously. That whole Esky magic thing from 2015 with the Royals that I mentioned. But I don't know. Yeah, it's because it doesn't really help when you get on base twice and the next two guys behind, well, the next 2, 3, 4, 5 guys behind you, 6, 7, 8, 9, wait, 1, 2, next 8 guys behind you combined for a total of 2 hits for the entire game.
It's not going to go great, yeah.
God damn, the Indians were 4 for 34 with 4 walks that game. Oh, Lord.
Yeah, but
that was awful.
Guess who got the hits, Merritt? Cesar freaking Hernandez. He's really good so far. He's just fundamental as heck. He does everything right. He runs kind of weird, which I noticed, but other than that, he's really solid. He runs like he's off balance. I don't know what that's about. But
I will say that, again, a wonderful reference to our hero, Rick Manning, in the bottom of the 10th. Now this guy can bunt. Immediately blows a bunt.
Yes, that was great. I don't know why it was bunting there. I don't think Tito called for it, because after the game, Tito said that they were swinging. But
well, he was probably going to try and bunt once and then just kind of go from there was probably the thought process. Out, so. But
if only he had one more strike to work with, Merritt, that he didn't waste on a bunt. Maybe he would have hit the ball. I don't know.
Maybe he would have taken it because he was waiting to see what the new pitcher was doing. Matt, what do you think of that, huh? Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Cesar Hernandez is fun. I like that addition so far. We joked about the top 10 second baseman, but I mean, man, he's really good. It's weird because love you, Jason Kipnis, but Cesar Hernandez is so much better so far.
Impact defensively, is there. You know, I mean, he definitely has good range, and he's incredible for all his hustle and work to get better at it. Jason Kipnis was never the smoothest second baseman. It was always very kind of herky jerky, I guess. And yeah. Hernandez has such a natural disposition to the position. Nice. And I really appreciate watching him play already. It's nice to have. It's nice to have a good defensive infield, really all the way around the diamond, and be able to have a guy who, if he can, you know, return to his ways of what, 2 years ago when he had an average like a 360 on base percentage from 2015 to 18 or something like that.
Yeah, no, he's been pretty good. He's been worth a couple wins every year.
He's a two-ish win player. It's not, you know, it's not terrible. It's right where you want all your starters to kind of be at a very starting level. I mean, 3 was a night, you know, from there, maybe if he gets on a hot streak or 2, he's an all-star. So there you go.
Now, Merritt, this would be the perfect time, I think, to either, do we just cut Francisco Lindor? Is that what the Indians, the plan?
Yeah, he's trash now. Get him out of here.
We got DFA him. Nobody wants him.
They have Yu Chang anyway, so who cares? There you go.
Yeah, but Lindor has been off to an awful start. He's going to rebound, of course. It's 3 games. I mean, that means a little bit more in a 60-game season, but it's still only 3 games. He's looked so bad. It's sliders low, especially have killed him, especially in the Saturday game when they lost. I think it was almost every slider out of the zone low he swung at and missed. It was remarkable how bad it was. He seems to realize that. He talked about it after the game. I didn't happen to pay attention close enough on Sunday if he actually fixed that issue or not, but he did have a hit, but he also got a really bad base running error on Sunday. So, I mean, he doesn't look great. I think that's the case for a lot of batters, probably. That's just the normal thing of not in your normal routine, and not obviously because the world is on fire right now. Everything's kind of weird. So I'd give him a lot of leeway. He deserves every ounce of patience we have. But it's just a thing that he had a rough first series, even though he had a really good defensive play. But as far as being at the plate and apparently on the base, it's a rough start for Lindor. And they're just going to cut him. Now's the time to re-sign him. His value is never going to be lower.
I'm looking at his rolling expected weighted on base percentage over the last however many games. It's been bad forever. No. Wow, he was really good for a long time. Anyway, he's great. Yeah. But no, he's looked absolutely horrendous, and this was bound to happen to someone.
Yeah.
I'm sad it's him. I'm glad that Jose Ramirez is balancing that out by being immediately on fire.
Yes,
that's great. I know I mentioned during our last podcast, during the Pirates couple of games, he was hitting the ball really hard just at everybody, and it's just something you kind of have to deal with. But he looks, looks out of sorts at the plate. He's been working counts okay, I think.
Couple games? He was swinging at everything early, wasn't he? I thought it was the opposite, he
dug himself some nice spots, he set up some nice hitters counts, but then immediately ruined them by swinging at a slider that was just running right at his back foot.
Yeah.
So I don't know. It's like you said, it's only 2 games, 3 games, but three games is, I mean, if this happens for another week, we're talking about basically a month's worth of baseball of him being shit, and that's not good. And if he turns it around, awesome. But it's just, do they, you know, it sucks to say they don't have time, because what are you going to do otherwise? He had such a tremendous play defensively in Saturday's game alone. He's such a rock defensively, and he's still good and still, you know, it's not like now pitchers can just, you know, throw garbage at him and just treat him like a pitcher at the plate. But no, I you wonder and you worry, but what are you going to do? I mean, Carlos Santana also doesn't look great, but he keeps on working walks, so that's fine. And Franmil Reyes still can't take a pitch to save his life, but he hits the ball really hard. But so that's nice. But
yeah, it's weird that Domingo Santana and Cesar Hernandez have been, at least Santana today, but Cesar Hernandez and Santana, like, their additions have been really good. It's the guys who are there, they were struggling, besides Jose Ramirez. But it's been neat to see their free agents come in and actually be good right away. compared to like Carlos Gonzalez and whoever the hell else have they cycled in and out over the last
few years. Ramirez, of course. Remember him? Remember Hanley Ramirez? Yeah. That was a good one.
Yeah, that's basically the equivalent of Domingo Santana, right? Although Santana's a lot younger, but he's just a big power hitting guy who was stuck in the outfield for some reason every single game so far. I don't get that.
I liked today's outfield because it was hilarious.
Poor Bradley.
Because it was Franmil Reyes, Bradley Zimmer, and Domingo Santana. It's like, what are we doing?
I don't know. Especially because before that, wasn't it like Mercado, Zimmer, and Daniel Johnson? Like, that was a super fast outfield.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Yeah, Saturday night's game was the exact opposite outfield.
Tito's just seeing what we can get away with by putting Bradley Zimmer in center.
This would be a good one. I mean, I don't know. Maybe it was a thought process of, when Clevenger's on the mound, he's like, oh, we'll just get another outing just like Bieber did last night, so we can just, you know, make sure we don't have to score too many runs. We'll just have all defense. And then with Carrasco pitching, he's like, well, I mean, Cookie might be good or he might be bad, so I'm going to make sure I get as many bats in the lineup as I can. And the reverse of everything that had to happen happened, and I didn't mind.
Yeah, and
today at least, both have been hilarious outfields. One for potential, and one for other potential. But yeah,
one thing that I think Mike Hattery was the first one I saw tweet about it was the fact that, especially like today when there was so many weird things on defense. Like, as soon as the Indians had a sizable lead, Tito basically just took everybody out. I don't know if that's quicker than he normally does, but it seemed like Tito's positively reacting to the fact that there's a shortened season and it's a sprint and everybody needs rest quicker. But I mean, it was like the sixth inning, I think, where the first substitution started, and then it was just everybody was suddenly out and Mike Freeman wasn't bad. Like, what? But
yeah, that was I think really it's neat weird, to see that. Huh?
Weird, but I think it's good, and it shows that he's forward thinking about how to handle such a weird season.
I didn't really even think about that, but I just, because, you know, I was, by the end of the game, I was kind of half playing and half watching Doom Eternal. But I looked up and I'm like, why the hell is Mike Freeman batting?
But, which one of these is in hell? Is it the baseball game or the Doom?
Him, Christian Arroyo, Greg Allen, Daniel Johnson, all of them were just in like so quick. And granted, you want to get Johnson in for Santana like as soon as possible. If you get three hits out of Domingo Santana and you can just get him the hell out of there. We've been flaming fires. Same thing with Reyes, right? You get a hit out of him, you get a run scored, and then you just get him out and you put Allen in there. So it's definitely kind of a two sides of what you're saying. I would think it's yes, you need to get guys off the field and get them back in the dugout and resting, while keeping your other guys honestly fresh and in the game. Like, getting in that bat for Mike Freeman, I think, is big, not only for rest for someone like Cesar Hernandez, but he is going to need to play, and he needs to at least be in the flow of the game in some way, and have some of that juice flowing. I don't know if it's helpful or not to only have him bat one time every two games, but still, I don't know. It's a very smart move, and it's definitely another thing. I mean, the Royals were the same exact way. They just stink, so.
So every Sunday, we ask everybody on Twitter and Facebook for their questions for that we can answer on the podcast. This week, we got a lot of them were just angry about the extra innings rule because of when I asked it. I asked on Sunday morning, and everyone was still mad about that on Saturday. So we'll take a couple that weren't related to that, because I think by the time this comes out, that'll be less of an issue, unless the Indians lose. I guess it'll be out before Monday's game, so it probably won't be big of an issue. But we get to get a couple good ones. Our first one from @CleeOwlBears, which, of course, is the future name of the Cleveland Indians.
Are you asking yourself questions? Is that what's going on?
Owlbears is my burner account. Yeah. He asks, it's possible we'll have two great outfielders competing for one spot. Would it be too wacky to put Oscar and Bradley in right and left and give the center field less room to cover? So he's basically talking about I think it's fun to imagine that you're putting like Fran Miller, Domingo in center. And if you have, I would put, instead of, just to take this into the extreme, put Allen and Bradley on each side and then tell them just save Fran Mil Reyes' life in center field. I think it's probably more difficult than just being fast. I'm sure there's something in center field, like seeing the ball. If you don't practice it at all, I'm sure it's going to be harder to track balls in center field. But I like the idea of just putting two speedy guys on the outside and just having somebody who's lesser in center field. I also think either Bradley Zimmer or Oscar Mercado are fine on either corner outfield. So if you get to the point where you want both of them out there, I don't think it's a big deal to put like Bradley in center or even Oscar in center and one of them in a corner. But again, this just goes back to how many outfielders they have. Sans Jake Bowers now, but everybody else who's a potential, there's just so many different combinations. And I think we've seen a different outfield combination every game so far. So yeah, I'm sure lot more.
I mean, I think the idea would be, yes, to just, what is the smallest field at Progressive? Probably left field, right? Yeah, I mean, it has the wall and everything, but I mean, that's, I mean, the idea would, what I think, but yeah, to play, I mean, and they've been doing this for years now, is you play double defense and then one big bat, but they just haven't had the big bat until this year, I don't think so.
Yes, thanks for the question, and thanks for being the future name of the Indians.
Now, and again, I really do like your idea, though, sticking the bad fielder in the middle.
And just, like, playing them slightly closer to center field, just so they can cover
them. While you were talking, I was trying to find that thing that's on Baseball Savant that shows not only outs above average, but based on, like, which direction you travel, right? Like, it was showing nice. I can't remember where.
Like if they're faster one direction, they get a jump on.
Yeah, like they get like. I remember there was a thing that you could see about like Andrew McCutchen. He was really good at coming in at balls, but bad at going back on them. Same thing. Really, you know, I wrote a couple articles about it last year.
God, Baseball Savant's so good.
I know. Well, it's good, but also its website is surprisingly hard to navigate. Somehow, it's so pretty, it is, but yeah. Then also you're just like, oh, here it is, directional OAA. So I guess what you'd want to do would be go to the Indians one, and just kind of.
And just squeeze any little value you can out.
You know, I mean, where? Yeah, like where Reyes is good at coming in on balls, but bad everywhere else. Mercado is good at going to the left. This is all from stuff from last year, so we don't have any information on Daniel Johnson or Bradley Zimmer that I know of.
Oof. I mean, Bradley Zimmer, just put that man everywhere. As long as he doesn't run Mach 2 into the wall, he's good.
Well, he might. He's apparently good at going back and to the right. So you could put him in left. You could put Franmil Reyes in center, play him really deep. And then you could play Oscar Mercado in right. And then, according to stats, you should have pretty good coverage of all of that.
I wonder, is being able to play the ball forward just easier? Like, is that a thing that a lot of bad outfielders are probably better at?
I would think
you're just seeing the ball just, on running straight ahead.
It's coming at you. So.
Yeah, I would assume like no matter what, that's anybody's best is unless they're weird.
I mean, he is elite at coming in on ball. He is a plus that man five can run straight like effort.
Nobody else. Let me tell you.
you want to see what a freight train look like when we played baseball? There it is. He can do one thing: power forward. That's it.
Thanks for the question. We'll go to our next one from at LGT Andrew K, who's actually one of our moderators on Let's Go Chive. He's a great guy. Yeah, he used to write.
This is all nepotism and bull crap. It's you asking questions and someone else on the website.
It's also my burner account. I plan in questions just so I can have great answers to all of them. But he asked how many teams with a losing record will make the Mickey Mouse playoffs this year, which is also, I just wanted to get to be able to talk about, because I think that was since the last show, that the stupid thing, this is even worse than the second. I think it's even worse than the second base rule, is that everybody gets in the playoffs now. You're just in. Doesn't matter. It's 16 teams. That's more than half the league gets a playoff spot now. The second and first place in each division, plus two wild card in each, conference, but each league, everybody gets a playoff spot. So, man, that's annoying. I guess, again, sort of, like maybe, if you're doing it just this year. Shut up, Merritt. I'd be fine with it this year, but there's no way anybody's going to give up the money, and it's just going to be from now on we're going to have a million playoff spots.
I don't
give
a shit about tradition, so it's
so bad. There's going to be a losing team eventually. It's been close, I think. You're going to get like the Red Sox at 29 and 31 getting a playoff spot.
Well, let's see. In the American League, the teams that are almost definitely going to make it are what? The Yankees, the Rays, the Twins, the Astros.
I mean, say the Indians eventually, Merritt.
I'm getting to it. I only have four. They're definitely not one of the four best teams.
Oh, yeah. That's why none of you cowards picked him in our preseason picks, besides me.
Listen, I picked the Athletics to win the World Series, all right? So cram it. Oh, the A's will make it. That's right. Yeah, the A's will make it. You
picked the A's for a little
bit. I forgot about them. And then we'll say the Indians, and then, I don't know, the White Sox? I don't know. See, that now it's getting a little bit weird. You're right. Once you get past the top two in each division.
Once you get past, I don't know, six or five, like it's been now, you're getting the weird ones for some
other
reason.
No, I just,
isn't
I mean,
weird how that works.
Well, and I'm just like, are the Angels going to make it? Yeah, probably. I'd say the Angels will make it with a winning record. So, yeah, it's six. I don't even know who's on the Red Sox anymore. They've traded away everybody.
Mookie Betts, nope.
I don't think there will be, at least this year, and especially in the National League, because you're going to get like Braves, Nets, Mets, Brewers, I don't know, whatever, two teams from the Central Division, Dodgers. Oh, shit, the West Division sucks ass. Oh, no, they're so bad.
Yeah, the NL is going to be a mess. It's going to be a bunch of people right in the fringe. I think when we get to a full season and do this, I don't know if it's going to encourage – worse teams to trade more, or if it's going to encourage teams that are like on the bubble to not bother because they know like, oh, we can just slip into an eight seed. It's fine. And then we'll see what happens in the playoffs. I think it's going to be more that than like a team who's 11th and 12th trying to trade desperately and increasing the trade market. I think it's going to be these teams that are on the bubble, but in the bubble just saying, oh, we'll make it. It's fine. There's so many playoff spots that we cannot spend more money and we'll get in, so, and just hope for the best.
If this had happened last year, right?
The Indians would have been in. Yeah.
The Indians would have been in, and then the Red Sox would have gotten in at 84 and 78, and then the Rangers would have gotten in at 78 and 84.
So dumb. So there you go. It already would have happened.
If it had, and then in the NL, you would have had everyone who got in, plus then the Diamondbacks, the Mets at 86 wins, and the Cubs at 84 wins.
This is hot garbage, man. That's what this is.
Listen, I don't give a shit. All right. You know what? I like the idea. I like this whole wild card round. I guess you're right. I don't know. Whatever. Like, I'll tell you what. Once they stop playing only the winner of the NL and only the winner of the AL and in a straight up and down league, like the Premier League, once they stop doing that, who cares? Like, I don't know. True.
I always thought that the way they do it now is like the perfect middle ground of rewarding winning your division and also not.
I agree. It that down. Is true. Because I think if they care about divisions, which this eliminates the value of divisions completely.
Yeah,
like this, no point. This now immediately means that you should not have an unbalanced, what do you call it? This immediately schedule, yeah. This just do basically what the, like, you know, like. In basketball, like, I don't know, did anyone care that the Cavs would win the whatever the hell division? I don't even know what division they're in. I know what division, like, the Heat are in, and that's the only division I know that I can definitely tell you what every team is in. It's even weirder
really
in hockey.
Point. I can do it with the NFL and baseball. I know every
in a heartbeat.
What division, but,
like,
but not hockey or – wow.
I don't even know the names of them. Well, that's the thing. I don't know the names of the – like, even in hockey, it's like – because they have even weirder names. They have, like, the – they're all named after people now, but like I'm
because they don't even give a shit. They just change them. Who cares?
I'm pretty sure there's a Southwest division in basketball, but
yeah, it's just West and East, and that's top eight. It's
yeah, exactly. Yeah. And then in football, I mean, you know, because it matters to win your division.
Yeah, which I think is good. It's good to have rivals. It's
but so I one thing I do like though is just that it's the way they did valuing it is that all your games are at home. Like all the top seeds do have all their games at home, which I think is a neat wrinkle.
No, wait, that's only the wild card though, right?
What's that?
Is that only the wild card? Where
that's only the wild card round. Yeah. So it's a three game series for everyone that everyone plays in, and everyone all the top four seeds in each division or in each league will have all their home games at home, which I think is a neat way to do it. It definitely, you know, brings some value, but it also at the same time reduces value to winning the division. It just means having the most wins, which obviously would lead to winning a division. And it helps. I'll say this. It helps teams like the Rays, who never will win the division. You know what I mean? Like I think they've won the division once in their entire existence.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause every time the Yankees cycle down, the Red Sox are going to cycle up and it's just,
well, yeah. And, and when the Yankees are bad, they still win 87 games. Like
sons of bitches. Yeah.
They have bad seasons the way the Indians have okay seasons that we're happy about. Like it's bananas. So I don't know. You're right. It's a strange decision to do the top 16. I get it this year because everything is so, there's so much more variability to this.
I feel like it'll at least even it out a little more this year because
there won't be shitty teams. Like I was reading off the what do you call it from last year. I'm not going to sit here and say that I don't know. I mean, the Rangers were an okay team. They weren't bad. They weren't great. They weren't bad though. Or like the Cubs were a good team last year. So were the Diamondbacks. They weren't fantastic, but they was 80. I don't think you can look at like the Cubs lineup and say to yourself, this team stinks. They deserve to be in the playoffs. They didn't make it, but you know, they're not horrible. Same thing with the Rangers weren't great, but you know,
they weren't great.
For some reason, they had three starting pitchers last year. That's very strange, but yeah.
It's a thing. You know, we'll see it this year and see if it goes on. Everybody like around the league seems so excited. They're not gonna turn down.
Well, all the people on the TV and stuff have to carry water, and I'll be honest, yeah. Whatever, you know, it might suck, but I'm firmly in the boat of just do weird fucked up shit the entire season, and we'll see where it goes from here. And if it sucks, then don't do it anymore, and I'm sure they'll figure that part out. But, like, I don't know. I think that if there was a game last year and you had Lance Lynn and Mike Minor as the first two starters in a playoff series, in a three-game playoff series, there's a chance they could win that series against a team like the 2019, they would have had the lowest seed, and the highest seed would have been the Astros. Maybe they won't win that one, but still, like, it's not. Well, maybe it would be a blowout. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe not that one. Yeah,
but again, hey, you know, that's a fun little series there because it's local, like a rivalry.
Yeah,
those guys don't suck as pitchers. they're not great, but you know, I mean, it would definitely make life harder on the Astros. So that's fine with me.
So, Merritt, that's going to do it this week for us. We got, holy cow, we're in the middle of a baseball week, and there's going to be more coming up this week.
We did it.
We're here for now. We'll see how it goes.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so I will talk to you next week.
I'm going to eat more pizza, and I'll get back to you. Good luck.
See ya.